Radio.
Hello and welcome to A Kind Voice on Employment, Opportunity, and Innovation. I'm David Levins.
And I'm Jessica Greenspan.
And today's guest employs his time in a very innovative way, and in doing so, he's helping make our world a kinder, more connected place.
Yeah, so today we're really excited to have Steve Hunter of Switchback Cyclery. Steve uses his kind voice in a really empowering way to propel the community forward, both literally and figuratively. His shop offers meaningful employment and fulfilling relationships to vulnerable members of the community who have traditionally been marginalized by homelessness, mental health challenges, addictions, and other barriers. Switchback Cyclery offers a ray of sunshine within the darkness of rejection and abuse and creates a ripple effect of hope, dignity, and self-esteem throughout the community, powered by the metaphor of bicycles. Steve, we're really excited to have you on the show. Thanks so much for coming on.
Well, it's my pleasure.
You're calling in from Canada, right?
That's correct. Yes, I'm talking to you from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. It's a little bit rainy and cool here for some of our folks who are listening in other parts of the world. It's getting close to winter.
And you guys in Canada are tough. You could handle those winters, right?
Yes, we can. Although in this particular part of the country, we're pretty close to the Great Lakes, and so there's a fairly large cycling community that tries to or attempts to ride their bikes all winter.
Wow, that is impressive. Now, Switchback Cyclery, can you kind of give us an overview of what you guys do?
Yeah, so Switchback is 5 years old now, and it was a bit of a brainchild of a business. It's a social purpose enterprise. We employ, like you said, we employ marginalized folks who have come from a vast array of backgrounds of abuse and mental health and physical health challenges and other things. But when you walk in the front door of it, it looks like your typical independent bike dealer. We sell new bikes. We sell accessories and parts. We offer really excellent service. And I think the main difference that you might find is that it's a rather calm and inviting environment with a lot of really friendly people welcoming you in. It's that way on purpose, because what we really want to do is have people first. We're not about come in here and buy a product so much as we are welcoming the person and valuing the human being, the human factor.
And calm is so good, because I think one has to feel comfortable before they start to make a decision on a purchase like a bicycle, because it is an important purchase.
Yeah, that's correct, Dave. The interesting thing that has developed over the years, specifically with bike shops, is that they've become a little bit bro-centered. A little bit more testosterone than a lot of us might be comfortable with, and I have spoken with a number of women over the years, in particular, you know, as I've discussed these sorts of things, that have said, when I go into a bike shop, I feel like I leave my brains behind. I don't know the right terminology. I feel stupid. And so when we designed this, we chose colors and we played music and we chose the decor that would be knee-jerk reaction to anybody walking in would be that this is a welcome place and I'm being actually invited in. I'm not being intimidated. And so that's really important to us.
Oh, that's the right way to treat people, and also the right way to do business. So that's very cool. What attracted your business to us is how you employ those people who have been marginalized. Can you kind of walk us through an example of how you connect with a person like that and how you bring them into your business?
Yeah, so it's an interesting process for us. We are actually connected to Sanctuary Ministries. That's the charity that our little bike shop is under the umbrella of. And we spend a lot of time at Sanctuary reaching out to the larger homeless or street-involved community in the downtown Toronto area. And what we observed as we've spent years interacting with with these folks and doing a lot of different things. But a lot of what we do is offer meals. We have nurses and we have a lot of outreach workers. We do a lot of advocacy work. But one of the things that I observed when we were just spending time with these folks was that all we're offering is really lovely. And it's important. It's relationship, it's food, it's advocacy at many levels. But there's a deep down core desire in every human being, I feel, to be productive in some way. And we were looking for a way that we could offer that kind of dignified work to our community. And I am more interested in actually working with this population alongside of them doing something than I am just sitting across the table visiting with them when we're eating a meal. That's all good, but I found that little projects that I actually did at Sanctuary before we even opened the shop that I was working on, just renovation projects, were when those folks that were part of the street-involved community would come by and say, what are you doing? And I explained to them, can I help you? Yes. And it would light them up in a way that was totally different from when I sat across the table from them just having a meal. So that's really where the brainchild for this came from. It was an observation that I think we really deeply within our core, there's this idea of work that is sort of ordained. It's sort of part of the human race that everybody needs to have the ability to experience.
And when you're working together, the differences kind of fall to the wayside. Because as a New Yorker, I started a community garden cooperative in Georgia. And once we started pulling weeds together and doing all the dirty work, all the differences kind of faded away and we were one community creating this garden.
And that's exactly right. And that's our experience. I think that's the universal experience. What happens is that the playing field, we talk about leveling the playing field, but that action of working together actually does level it. We're on the same plane, and that changes how we interact. It changes how we relate, and it actually allows healing and growth and forgiveness, and it opens minds and hearts in a way that otherwise may have stayed closed for maybe a lifetime. And so all of those are sort of spin-off benefits, and at different times in different people's lives and experiences that we're working with, all of a sudden there'll be, it feels like we've reached inside their heart and we've flipped another dip switch and something else is coming on. It's a new area of their imagination that's just been woken up or turned on or something. And it's beautiful to be part of that and work with it. And it works both ways. That inspires me and it gives me new inspiration and sometimes a whole new area of creativity. It works both ways.
It's such a beautiful thing, having that agenda, having that purpose. And to connect someone without the experience, who's a little down on the luck, with your business, that's a very good thing to do, very difficult thing to do. Can you kind of walk us through the process from when you first onboard somebody and how that works?
Yeah, so the idea of bicycles was very intentional for us, and there's a bunch of reasons for that, and most of you folks will understand that, because I think it's relatively universally understood that the bicycle is probably the best known form of transportation to mankind. It's green, it's efficient, it's healthy, it doesn't take up much space, there's just so many good things about the bike, but beyond that, it is a very, very, very simple machine. So that creates an accessibility. If I'm sitting at one of our drop-in meals talking with our folks and saying, what would you like to be, a brain surgeon? Well, there's a lot of steps between where they are and brain surgery. But there's not very many steps to actually touching a bike and beginning to work on it. So with our folks, when we actually began to advertise in our drop-in meals that, hey, we're going to open this shop, and if anybody's interested, I would love to have a meeting with you upstairs afterwards. We're going to have an information session. And the most important thing I said is that you do not need to know anything about bikes. But if you're interested in trying a little bit of work in a fun, loving, safe environment, come and join us. And we had overwhelming responses. I think that's what was attractive. And then when I talked about what we were actually doing and explained how simple the machine was and that there was lots of ways to become involved, That opened, you could see eyes. Through the eyes, you could see hearts were being like, hey, I can actually do this. This is something I can see a way forward.
That must be a very satisfying thing when you see that success in action and see people just getting engaged and enjoying the work.
Oh, it is. It's it is. It's really quite interesting. I unpacked a box from Park Tool. Park Tool's in the States. It's the largest, probably the largest tool manufacturer for the bicycle industry in the world, actually. And I unpacked a box, and there was a sticker in this box that just had some new parts and some books shipped with it. There's a sticker in the box that said, trust me, I'm a Park Tool trained mechanic. And I took that sticker back to one of our guys who does all of our bike washes. He's the guy that cleans every drivetrain that ever goes through our shop. He cleans the bike, and when the customer gets their bike back, they're amazed at how clean it is. And I send them back to this guy, but he took this sticker and he said, whoa, that's so cool. I said, damn, this sticker's for you. And it just lit him right up because he is a trained, he's a completely certified and trained mechanic. He's gone through all the courses. He scored highly on them. There's a whole bunch of other challenges in his life that keep him from having the ability to remember everything and to do all that kind of work that's necessary to be a journeyman mechanic on a bike. But he is a rock star at cleaning frames, cleaning drivetrains, at cleaning the grease off of a bike and then putting the wheels and the parts back on it, and he gives it to the mechanic, and the mechanic can work with it without gloves if they want to because it's so clean. But the dignity that he gets from doing that, it's changed his life. It's been amazing to watch his growth to the point now where he's actually interested in just in the last 6 months, he's been interested in saying, I want to find my family.
Wow.
This kind of
connects, good work kind of connects with like the regenerative parts of the spirit to lead them to other places.
That's what happens. He begins to recognize, you know, I could see the value in him immediately, but that's from my perspective, but he couldn't see his own value. I've known this particular fellow for 13 years. And for years, I've sat across from him at drop-in meals and whatever, and he's always got kind of a cool hat on, but it's always pulled down, often shades on his on. You couldn't really see his eyes, and he would look down at his food, and I'd say, hey, how you doing? Fine. How's your day? Good. When I offered these employment here, he was one of the guys that came to – I did the same offer of employment at our drop-ins for 3 weeks. Twice each week. So there were six times when I put this little information session on, and he was at every one of them. Same thing was said. He was there. We ended up going through the whole process of hiring, which doesn't look at all like most of us are used to when it comes to an interview. It's a lot more of a conversation. But we brought him in, and for 6 months, he would walk in the door and say, good morning, Dan. How are you? Fine. Glasses on, hat on. That's 5 years ago. This guy now walks in, and his clothes are different. His complexion's different. He stops and talks, and he jokes, and you can have a long conversation with him. And we have just recently been able to connect him with his family that he hasn't seen for about 20 years.
Wow, that's incredibly beautiful.
Possible. It wasn't even conceivable 5 years ago. Just because of the horrendous life he's experienced and, you know, the trauma he's been through and the mental health challenges and the home situation and a whole bunch of stuff. You know, we all have backwater stories, and his is pretty horrendous. But there's this lovely relationship that's just begun in the last few weeks with him and his sister that is making him glow.
Wow.
So who knows what's next for him? He may not stay in this. He may actually say, what I really want to do is, you know, carpentry work. And now he would be ready to go and take a course or whatever. He may stay here for his life, too. That's the other thing we do is we offer permanent employment. There's no reason for you to ever leave. So it's just those sorts of experiences that wake me up in the morning and keep me going every day.
That is such a wonderful thing you're doing. It sounds like there's a lot of challenges involved. So we're going to take our first break, and we'll ask about that when we come back.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with reaching out when you need. I'll be there for you, and maybe you can be for me. With a kind voice, a few kind words, an open ear for when you need to be heard, a warm heart, we can make that choice to be a kind voice, a few kind
words. Hi, I'm Kathy King, founder and executive director of Canines with a Cause. And I use my kind voice to create awareness of the importance of companion animals in our world and their ability to heal a broken soul. Canines with a Cause rescues dogs from local animal shelters. The dogs are placed with incarcerated women where they live and train as comfort companions or service animals for veterans battling PTSD. We also provide free training classes for the veterans, which enables them to develop skills to train their own dogs and become experienced handlers. The dogs provide the veterans with many benefits, simple companionship, motivation to get out of bed in the morning, and unconditional, non-judgmental love. Learning to train a dog also helps the veterans out of their homes and get involved again in civilian life. It helps them develop emotional coping skills and resiliency. The dog and handler create a strong bond through working together, and the dog is trained for specific tasks to help the veteran lead a more productive, less stressful life. Canines with a Cause strives to make the world we all share a kinder, more connected place. We do this by healing through unconditional love. Separately, it's difficult for a dog in a shelter, an incarcerated woman, or a veteran suffering with post-traumatic stress disorder to share their kind voices. But by creating a channel process to bring them together, they can be a kind voice to and for each other. If you would like to know more about Canines with a Cause, visit our website, canineswithacause.org. Thank you.
Kind Voice Radio.
Hello and welcome back to Kind Voice on Employment, Opportunity, and Innovation. I'm your host, David Levins.
And I'm Jessica Greenspan. And today we're talking with Steve Hunter of Switchback Cyclery. Hi, Steve. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Hey, Steve. What you're doing is so awesome. And I'm just wondering if you encounter any challenges when you're onboarding someone down on the luck.
Yeah, that's a good question, Dave. And I think one of the things that's really important about understanding this work, there are a lot of folks that, you know, come through our door that say, hey, we love what you're doing. What are, we would love to do it, you know, and I think there's an idea, there's a feel good part to this, what we're doing. And I think a lot of probably similar programs have the same thing. When you experience them from the outside, they look really good and they want to get involved. And I'm pretty open and clear about saying this work's not for the faint of heart. You have to be willing to go to bed at night with a broken heart a lot. We've just before the break discussed one of our participants here that has, you know, at this point has experienced a great part of his story, but he's 48 years old, and the last 20 years has been pretty awful. The last 20, 25 years has been really awful. And what happens when we bring 2, 3, 4, 5 of these kinds of folks together and we work together and try to develop as much of as possible, we try to develop a family relationship in the way that there are those of us who are mentoring and caring for those who haven't been mentored and cared for. So there's, you know, it's not completely paternal, but it certainly looks like that in a lot of ways. And we're working with a group of folks who have been on the streets. They've been probably experimenting with a lot of different products that they've taken into their body, typically to dull the pain that they're living in their life, not recreationally so much, but they become dependent on these painkillers to take them away from the reality. And there's it's a hard road. That stuff's expensive, and often it's hard to get a hold of. And there's violence involved in that market, and there's a lot of undignified work involved in that. And so bringing folks like that into an environment that's a relatively professional environment, where we have a lot of interaction with the general public, and a lot of problem-solving skills. Every bike that comes in is broken or needs repaired, and so we have a problem, and we have to figure out how to fix it. All of that requires problem-solving skills that have not been used on the street. The way things are problem-solved on the street are often immoral and often violent and painful. And so there's a whole new way of living that has to happen here. And so there are lots of days when I have to intervene between one or two or three different folks that are having a discussion about how things should be done or what you said or what you meant by what you said. And so there's a lot of ongoing tension. As some of our folks get a little more comfortable in the environment and they recognize it's a safe space, what we may experience from them is anger that we didn't experience at the beginning. And it really, it's just because they're finally safe to express what's deep inside and it's coming out. And we have to be willing to walk with that person in that and allow it to come out and be drained off in a non-destructive way. And we try to collect people around that person, but it has to be people who can handle it. So there are lots of challenges on a daily basis where, you know, there hasn't been good sleep because there's old memories been keeping them up the night before, and they're trying not to use drugs to numb that pain. And so they come in and they're tired and they're irritable and it's easy to default to old patterns. So those are the sorts of challenges we work with pretty regularly. And then there's a bunch of other challenges around trying to get a bank account or trying to get a phone. You've got bad credit or you've got a bunch of fines unpaid, or there is, you know, you have an outstanding warrant for your arrest. Drug plans, getting teeth fixed, getting glasses. The list is as long as you can imagine. And then, of course, add on top of all of those the layer of mental health challenges that may have been what brought them to a marginalized position in the first place. And so the work can be very daunting. And so it's a bit of a lifetime commitment. You know, there's that part of it. There are parts to my day when I get on my bike to ride home at the end of the day and I like, wow, that was a hard day. Let's see if we can reset for tomorrow.
Yeah, it sounds like almost a coach, a lot of game management to deal with all the variables that go into this. You've been doing this for a few years now, is that correct?
Yes, yeah, so I've been running the bike shop now for 5 years. Been with Sanctuary for just a little over 13 years. And so there was a previous workshop that we ran before the bike shop that was more of a meaningful work experience, and it wasn't a legitimate full-fledged business that also gave people these sorts of experiences. And so, yes, there's been quite a few years in this field now for me.
So you kind of ramped up to where you are now. It's a very neat thing, and we want to talk a little bit more about that. But I'd like to get into the Global Giving Project you have out there, and it's kind of an opportunity for others to participate in this story, and I think it's just getting started. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, it is. It is getting started, and we actually came across the Global Giving Project by mistake. It's really quite beautiful how it happened. We're as a nonprofit, we're always trying to be more sustainable. I think that's a word that we're all very familiar with today. It seems to be on everybody's tongue with regards to their holidays, to their bills and the way they live and the way the business runs and how we keep the world. But we're always looking to see if we can balance the budget sheet more and more ourselves. And so we started this year for the first time. We had a fundraiser ride. It's called the Harvest Ride. And we're hoping to make it an annual event. And it's involving a bunch of people that have never really been involved before. And so what we did is we advertised this, and one of our employees here from the healthy side has friends and relationships on the West Coast, the American West Coast in California. And they connected us to the Global Giving Project, which is like, wow, we had no idea. This is really lovely. I've actually been working very close to home and working within the community and working with, you know, my own relationship circles. And this is kind of like, oh, this is a different stage. I wasn't aware. And so this is very new to us, and we're just figuring it out, but it's like, this is amazing. And there's a bunch of stuff I really like about it. One of them is that I'm becoming aware of how big the community that I'm a part of that is doing this kind of work. And that is so encouraging. I just love sifting through the projects and reading about them. And I said, man, I'd like to get behind this one. Wow, I'd like to be part of this one. Love that one.
Yeah, it's awesome, the diversity of projects out there. And when people contribute to your project, the money buys something very specific. Can you go through some of the specific things that a donation can buy?
Absolutely. Yeah, so there are a whole different levels of giving that are available that provide different means of propelling community forward. For $20, someone could pay for a one-on-one mentorship meeting. Every one of our staff here are connected to a mentor. And during our business hours, we like those meetings to take place. And that's a mentor that doesn't work here. They come in, they care for the person, and then they work with them one-on-one to develop a bunch of stuff outside of their job here. So a $20 donation pays for one of those meetings. A $40 donation provides a full uniform, including an apron and shoes for one of our employees. $80 covers the cost of an eye exam or other health care procedures. $400 covers an accredited bicycle, Winterbourne. We have a bicycle institute here in Ontario called Winterbourne Bicycle Institute that we use for all of our professional development. $400 will provide a wheel building course, professional wheel building course. It's a diplomaed program. $775 will equip a workbench with a complete set of tools. $2,000 covers a professional mechanic course that for a mechanic, and it's actually a 2-week course, and it's in depth, and it's a full 2 weeks, and they come out a completely accredited and certified mechanic. $4,000, it sounds like a lot, but it gives us wheelchair accessibility in our building, which is something we'd love to have. That broadens our ability to offer employment to a lot of folks, again, who are marginalized because of physical abilities.
For now, I'd like to take a quick break for a good news report, and we'll be right back after this.
Everyone, this is Brandon Shira. Welcome to the Good News Report, where we deliver happy and exciting news from all over the world. Today's story comes from Fort Smith, Arkansas, where a 69-year-old retired nurse, Charlotte Tidwell, is doing something a little more than sitting on the couch and watching TV. Charlotte is using her pension to run a food pantry she started and is working there 6 days a week without getting paid. Tidwell feeds 7,000 people a month, handing out 500,000 meals a year through her Antioch for Youth and Family group. Charlotte commented, "I was raised in poverty, and I understand all the issues that go along with not having enough money." Initially, she started the charity in 2000 after retiring and learning that seniors in her community were eating cat and dog food. She commented, "I wanted to continue if anything happens to me. I just believe it will happen." This is definitely one of my favorite stories, and I absolutely admire Charlotte for going out and doing so much good for her community. Not only is she helping those in need, but she's also empowering and inspiring the youth of the community to do the same. A very great story. To go along with this story, I have decided to choose a quote of the week that I heard from one of my mentors at a poetry workshop that I attend. The first ingredient of love is self-love. I hope you guys all enjoyed this report, and I really hope that this story has inspired you more this week. Thank you all for listening, and I will see you all next time. Take care.
A Kind Voice Radio.
And welcome back to Kind Voice on Employment, Opportunity, and Innovation. I'm David Levins.
And I'm Jessica Greenspan. And today we have Steve Hunter of Switchback Psychery on the show. Hi, Steve. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
Hey.
Good to be here.
Yeah. We love your passion for this, and it's just such a wonderful opportunity to help those who have experienced some sort of trauma or abuse, rejection, and channel their emotions into something meaningful. We talked a little bit about the Global Giving Project and how people can contribute. I wanted to get into the transition from the project to the shop itself. Could you tell us a little bit about how the shop itself came about in Riverside?
The shop was born out of failure. Interesting. I think that's probably a lot of people nodding. Yes, I understand that experience, that process. So
yeah.
The one that I referred to previously was a woodworking shop where we had a meaningful work experience is what we called. And we were actually making wood products and we were selling them. But there was really no business plan and there was no structure. And we had no idea what we were doing. We just loved people. And we said, I can see how important it is for people to experience meaningful, dignified work.
Yeah.
And so there were some things that we learned out of that fail, as I'll refer to it as, that really propelled us forward. And we recognized that we need to have a really sensible business plan and we need to have the proper supports in place first. And we need to have an advisory board. We need to have an accountability and people that are in the same business we are that are willing to come alongside us. And so in Toronto, we have as we have everywhere around the world, United Way. And the United Way in Toronto has started something called the Enterprise Fund. And so TEF, I'll just call it TEF, that's what we call it. And it's a competition, a business plan competition that happens every year. But in order to participate in the competition, there are five seminars that they put on that where your attendance is required. I became aware of this at just about the time when we folded the old shop up and we were talking about something new, and I thought this was the direction to go. So we participated in that. And long story short, we ended up winning the business plan competition that year and got seed funding to start this.
That's amazing.
So we're very connected to United Way in that way. And the fun thing is that they didn't give us the money and walk away. Like a good parent, they stick with us and they're holding us accountable, but more importantly, they're saying, how can we help? What's needed. And,
yeah.
And I feel like our relationship with them at this point has grown to the point where we're informing them of many challenges and they have some answers for us, but then we're working together to develop new strategies and understanding what may be missing as we go forward in the whole social entrepreneurship. It's become a fairly global thing. A lot of colleges and universities are now, you know, providing courses on social entrepreneurship. And so we feel like in many ways we're actually a project. It's legitimate what we're doing. It's a real business, but we're also experimenting. We're trying this, we're trying that, and we're collaborating with people who are coming from the professional side saying, how can we have more of an impact socially? What we're doing is okay, but how can we do better socially? What's really missing is how we care for our people. Where can we learn that? Where can we change? And so we're working in that environment now with Toronto Enterprise Fund or United Way and it's a really lovely relationship. And so with their backing, we started this shop and there was a shop and I love to give a shout out to them. It's 718 Cyclery. It's in New York City. 718 Cyclery. Google it. It's a great shop. But I woke up in the middle of the night once trying to imagine what a shop would look like. I had ideas in my head, but I said, there's got to be one out there. And I just got up in the middle of the night and Googled collaborative build bike. And that shop came up and I called Joe the next day. Joe Nocella is the owner of it. And I said, can we come and visit you? Two of us flew down and saw that shop within a week. I had, yes, this is what I saw in my dream.
Yeah.
Now his shop isn't even a social enterprise shop, but he's the guy that just loves interacting with human beings, and it's all about sharing the knowledge and the understanding, the simple understanding of a bike, and it's become a real magnet for that whole neighborhood in the 718. Of course, that's the area code, the 718 area, and it's doing amazing things. But he's really silently been our mentor. He has no idea how much he's mentored us over the years. Yeah. And so we're not alone. We're not doing something new. We're connected in many ways. And every time we try something, we try to share that with our advisory board and United Way and say, how can we do this better? How can we better serve this population? How can we make this more sustainable? And how can we get the word out? Because I'd love to see every business dubbed as a social enterprise.
Could you explain what an employment social enterprise is for those of us who don't know?
So I think the idea behind it is when we first started this 5-6 years ago, when we started looking into this, they were referred to as a social purpose enterprise, and I would just say that backwards. That it's an enterprise is anything that's making money. It's an enterprise. You're doing something to make money, and that's the sort of the general way our world is going.
Yes,
but an enterprise that has a social purpose usually arrests people's minds, and they think, well, what do you mean by that? So what we really mean is, it sounds kind of coy, but it's like we put people first. So if we go back and recognize originally what they were called, it was social purpose enterprise in that order. So first was our social purpose. And first we love and care for people, and next it's an enterprise. So how can we love and care for people while running a business? And there's huge challenges in that, but we pay market rate for rent. We pay market rate for insurance. We pay market rate for the products we buy, but we're trying to pay people well. So, and our productivity is low because when we hire somebody, typically out there in the big world, we take resumes and we hire the best person. We sort of do that in an inverted way. We take resumes, if you will, and we take the person that's least qualified. In fact, what we say is, really, all you really need is housing and a teachable spirit. Those are the only two things you really need to get on in life. If you have a teachable spirit and housing, and someone like us comes along, you can change your life. Your life can be changed. And so we're not taking resumes from the top, but we still have to compete at the global level. We still have to pay our bills. We still have to pay our rent. We still have to have enough food left at the end of the day after we've bought and sold and paid wages to go home and buy food for my own family. How does that work? And so that's really what a social enterprise is. It's putting a value on the human part of the equation that often gets rooted out early on, and capitalism can become the big monster that rears its head and marginalizes people. You know, we've used marginalized in our conversation today in a way that we refer to people who are street involved, who have really suffered. But in many, many industries across the world today, there are people that are marginalized that actually don't look different from you and I, but they're surviving on very little. They're not being paid well. They're not being treated well. So there's a whole bunch of social enterprises that need to be born out there, and that need to convert to social enterprises. That's how I would say. And that's really my platform. I really think there's enough.
Yeah, I love that. And it's kind of it's kind of the mental toughness, the cycle that you need, you know, to get through a bike race. You're kind of using that metaphor, building off of, the challenges and propelling yourself forward. How would you say that Switchback Cyclery evolved since it began as a shop about 5 or 6 years ago?
So when you walk in the door, it's actually evolved physically in quite a number of ways, and it's evolved in philosophically, our understanding too. So we'll start off with the physical. When you would have come in our door 5 years ago when we opened, there was a counter along one side, and there were actually maybe 2-3 new bikes. That was it. There was some stuff on the wall, but there were benches, mechanics benches, mm-hmm. right at the front. Within 15 feet of the front door, you walk in, and the person that would greet you would probably be working on a bike. And we developed it as a service shop. And what we had was about 15 feet behind the first mechanic, and there were two steps where the rest of the shop was two steps higher. It was up there where we built the rest of the service area for our marginalized folks to work. So they were actually elevated. But two things were important there. There was a firewall at the front, myself or my other manager. We would be at the front of the shop, and we would interact with the customers. Then our folks who were marginalized, who were experiencing this kind of stuff for the first time, could observe and engage based on their choice. They could observe me interacting with a customer. Good morning, how are you doing? Just simple conversation, to answering the phone, to problem solving and discussing things. And then as people would walk further back to look at the product that was on one side of the shop, and then the mechanics benches were on the other, the mechanics could interact at their will. It was their choice whether they just worked on the bike they were working on or if they said hi to the customer and developed a relationship. Well, for the first 2 or 3 months, myself and Cynthia, my co-manager, were the only ones that answered the phone. But I'll never forget the day when my hands were greasy and I grabbed a rag to wipe my hands. And the guy at the next bench said, do you want me to answer the phone? I said, that would be great. And he answered the phone and he said word for word what I had said when I answered the phone for the last 2 months.
Yeah.
And it brought tears to my eyes.
Yeah.
It was amazing. It was just amazing to see. And then it was like a floodgate was opened. And before you knew it, within 3 or 4 months, everybody was answering the phone. If someone was busy, someone else took it. And they said, I don't know what to say. And I taught them. I said, you don't have to know the answers. You just have to know who to ask. So, just hold on a minute and I'll get you that answer. And, hey, Steve, here's a person on the phone that's looking for a certain part for their bike. Great. And I would pick up and nobody felt dumb. And so that's the way the shop ran for the first 4 years. But as we got busier and busier and busier and they developed their social skills, they were being distracted by customers. People would come right in and walk past me and say, hi, I'm here to see so-and-so. And they would walk past me and say hi to this mechanic that they'd had a relationship with. And that was becoming a bit of a problem, a good problem, but it was a problem. We were not as efficient as we needed to be. So the shop has transformed, and now there's been a lot of pressure for us to sell more bikes. The people that are getting service here want to buy bikes from us, so we've sort of transitioned and we look a little bit more like a normal shop in a sense now, where you walk in and there's a lot of new product and bikes, and then further back there's a service counter, and by their own choice, the mechanics have said, we need to be at the back, so we're not distracted. Mm-hmm. It's still open. There's great conversations happen, and, you know, people will come right up to the counter and say, hey, can I talk to so-and-so? And say, I haven't seen him for a while. I just want to check in and see how he's doing. And say, of course you can. They'll say, hey, there's a guy here to see you. You know, take 5 minutes. And so it's still open and welcoming in that way. But philosophically, there's a change that took place in my understanding, and I would say it's as much my thing as anybody's. I did not want our shop to be viewed as come and see these unqualified people working. I didn't want it to look like a zoo. And so we hid the fact that we were a social enterprise and a nonprofit. We never talked about it. It was buried in our website. And a year and a half ago, people that I was going to say, this is who we are, this is what we're doing, and they would stand up, and some of them were even distributors that came into our shop and we were purchasing product from. I remember this one guy stopping, and he pushed his chair back, and he stood up, and he said, what? You've been a social enterprise nonprofit for all these years, and I've been working with you. I didn't even know this. Why isn't your story out there? And I said, well, this is why, because I don't want, you know, da, 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 da. And he said, you got to get your story out there. The fabric of the community has changed. People want to buy socially, and they want to support this kind of business. So in the last year, we've started using Instagram and Facebook for the year and a half, I guess, for the first time, and communicating who we are and what we do. And it's changed me. I'm recognizing that this is a global movement. And so again, you know, hooking back to the global giving, this is a lot bigger than I realized. I was kind of isolated here in Toronto, Canada, and I'm realizing, wow, there's a lot of people that have the same heart that are doing the same thing. And so we've begun to communicate that at a macro level, if you will, versus this little micro level where it's, you know, four pages down on our website. And I think that's changed who we are, and it's actually changed who our folks are that work here too. They get it. They say, yeah, this, you should try this at your place. And you know, that makes Mr. Businessman uncomfortable sometimes, but when it's coming from one of my guys, they say, tell me more about this. How's this work? And they'll talk for a while, and then they say, you should talk to Steve Hilton. So then, you know, it's kind of funny, these backdoor approaches. And we've had lovely conversations with businesses up and down our street in our local BIA area now, who are saying, hey, tell me more about this. How's this working? And that's, for me, what it's really all about. It's that's how we begin to change the fabric of what the face of business looks like.
Well, that's fantastic. So thanks so much, Steve. We have to take another break, but when we come back, we want to talk a little bit about your personal story.
The alchemy of kindness is one that we believe. When we reach out to each other, you know we both receive.
Hi, I'm Bruce Crammell, one of the original hosts on A Kind Voice Radio. My song, The Alchemy of Kindness, is about the good things that happen when kind voices come together. What you're about to hear is a message from Claire Bloom, who is using her kind voice to feed hungry children. We hope that you'll help Claire with her mission and make our world a kinder, more connected place, one act at a time.
Hi, I'm Claire Bloom. In 2011, I started End 68 Hours of Hunger in an effort to overcome childhood hunger right here in America. There are more than 16 million children in America who are hungry. Between the free lunch they get in school on Friday and the free breakfast they get in school on Monday. And what we know is that if we feed these children on the weekend, they can achieve 50% higher reading scores, 30% higher math scores, and are twice as likely to successfully complete the third grade, which is a primary indicator of high school graduation. To find out more, I'd love for you to be in contact with me. We have a website at www.end68hoursofhunger.org, or you can email me directly at end68hoursofhunger@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Thanks.
A Kind Voice Radio.
And welcome back to Kind Voice on Employment, Opportunity, and Innovation. I'm David Levins.
And I'm Jessica Greenspan. And right now we're talking to Steve Hunter of Switchback Cyclery. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
What would you say is the most important reason you do this work?
Well, you know, it sounds a little silly, but I just feel like I've been really deeply, deeply loved. And when I reflect on my own life that I've had, I'm 58 years old now, and I look back, I've got a lot of years behind me, and I recognize that it's that kind of relationship and love that I've had all my life that has given me mostly what I have in life. I think sometimes we don't recognize how valuable love and relationship is to our physical, our mental, and our emotional well-being. And it gives us the ability to sleep well. It gives us the ability to live pretty healthy lives in so many ways. When we have relationship, we're not alone. And when I realize how much I have benefited, there's no reason why I don't want to share what I've had with those who haven't had it. I just think it's the thing to do. It's like, I can share this. I have more than enough.
Yeah.
And so I just don't think there's any other reason for living than other than to love and care for the human race. I'm making more money, really? Like, what's
yeah.
that going to do for you? It doesn't hold value to me. It just doesn't. You know, sometimes people look at me like, what? Really? No, I don't care. I'm very happy. I'm content. I've got enough. In fact, here's more than I need. You need some? Here, take it. And I think that I've thought about that over the years and how, you know, that maybe it sounds corny to some people. I don't know. But here's my version. There's only really one shortage in the world. There's only one kind of poverty. I really don't think there's a shortage of housing. I think we all know there's not a shortage of food. We all know there's not a shortage of money. There's not even a shortage of jobs. There's just a shortage of relationship. I think every poverty in the world stems from a poverty of relationship. With poverty of relationship at play, as strongly as it is today, we have developed over capitalism. And that changes the game. If we could address the core poverty that we suffer from around the world and recognize relationship with each other, if the senior CEO at said bank can develop a relationship with the guy that's begging for money outside the door, that's what we need to happen. That changes everything. It's a game changer, and we recognize that there is enough to go around. There is really no reason to have global poverty or a food shortage or a housing shortage. There is enough. There's plenty. We just have it really poorly distributed, and that's really where I'm working. I recognize I have more than I need, so why not share it?
How beautiful.
Yeah, that's beautiful, and it connects so well with our mission here at the Kind Voice, and I just love the metaphor of cycling. So you have the, you know, the cycle of kindness. It just comes full circle. So could you talk a little bit about how the sport of cycling connects with the Switchback Cycle Remission?
Yes, it's interesting. The sport of cycling is actually a spinoff, I suppose. I'm not exactly sure when I go back to the very beginning of cycling if it was designed and developed as a meaningful way of transportation, but it quickly became a sport. But I think the thing that we're finding here for our own folks is that when we get our own employees who may or may not have had a bicycle in the past, when we get them connected with cycling, it's something that when you participate in it, even if you're just commuting to work, you don't do it for very long before you start feeling better. And
yes.
For a bunch of people that haven't maybe ever exercised and have had really horrendous diets, over the course of the 5 years that we've seen here, where we begin to interact with other areas, but the one thing that's consistent as these guys are starting to ride bikes, it's free. We get you a bike and you don't have
yeah.
to pay for transit anymore. We get you a bike and you can go anywhere you want, anytime you want. You don't have to be tied down to depending on something else, or I've only got so many tokens for the subway, and when they're gone,
mm-hmm.
so I can't do that. It broadens your horizon. It changes
yeah.
you from the inside. And I think it's become something rather of more than just transportation for our folks. It's actually become sport. And I would say that's
yeah.
interesting. You asked me how sport's connected to the shop, but I think it grew out of the shop. And now we have, you know, we have a bit of a following. We are not yet offering, you know, group rides as a shop yet, because we just don't have the manpower to do that. But there's a lot of people that are gathering around the shop as we get more awareness locally with group rides and stuff that are saying, hey, maybe we can connect this to your shop and we can do this as a Switchback thing. But it's such a healthy spinoff. And
yeah.
It just gets you out in nature, which is where we belong. You can't do it indoors. You're outside, and so you're interacting with nature. You're interacting with your home environment, which is outside, not sitting on the couch watching TV.
Exactly.
So there's so many things that are good about it that it's a dead ringer to me, but it's fun to watch people discover it that haven't discovered it before. I can have a really hard day at work here, and I can hop on my bike, and I have a 30-minute commute home, and by the time I get home, it's like, how are you? Well, I'm fantastic. I just rode my bike for half an hour.
As a distance runner and a budding ultra runner who loves to get out in nature and just go for a long run, I completely understand that. Exercise is great for the soul, and it's kind of like emotion in motion. You can really channel that into.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So we're running out of time, but it's really, really great to talk to you. I do want to ask you, do you have any advice for those of us who also want to lend their kind voice using something that they're passionate about, whether it be a sport or a hobby?
That's a good question. I think I would say go for it. If this is niggling around the edges of your mind and you're thinking, I wonder if there's something here. Try it. Do it. Go for it.
Yeah.
In a previous life, I'll give you a quick anecdote here. I know we're out of time, so I won't be too long. But in a previous life, I've lived 58 years. I've done a lot of things. I owned and operated my own truck. And for some reason, I kept running into guys whose relationships had gone south with their wife or their girlfriend or whatever. And I remember saying, hey, why don't you come with me on my trip? You know, and you got a couple days or whatever, or overnight trip. And I'd get them in the truck and we'd start talking. And we would talk half of the way, half of the night, a little bit stuff. And then we'd turn around and we'd head towards home. And as the trip was getting to the end, the guy would feel comfortable with me. And he'd start pouring his heart out. And it was in the last few minutes or hour that we had together that things really happened. And I halfway through the trip, I was thinking, man, this isn't going to go anywhere. But by the end, it did. And my encouragement is go for it and stick to it long enough. And don't quit, but just change it a little bit as you go. Because it is tough. You are going against the current. You have to be like a salmon. You have to say, I got to swim against the current. But we can do this. And there are lots of times that salmon jump that don't make it, and they have to go back and try it again, and that's what this is all about. But there's what else
that's
is there to live for, really?
That's
you know, be like a salmon. It takes a lot of
be
courage
like
and
a salmon.
Strength. That's right.
Be like a salmon. I like that mantra. Be like a salmon. Well, on that note, Steve, is there anything we haven't asked you that you'd like to share with us?
I love what you guys are doing. I'm amazed. This is great. I love the forum. Thank you guys so much for connecting with us.
Thank you so much.
Connected to a large community that I wasn't aware of that was out there, and that's very inspirational.
Could you give us your contact information if people want to reach you?
Sure. The phone number here at the shop is 416-466-6776, and you can contact me, Steve H, at Switchback Cyclery. That's all one word. .ca.
Well, thank you very, very much for coming on the show. This was fantastic. I love the ripple effect and of creating relationships and propelling the community forward.
Thank you. Thank you, folks. Have a great day.
And that was Steve Hunter from Switchback Cyclery. And what an amazing message he had.
Yeah, I totally agree with his philosophy. Like, if there's a poverty, it's just the poverty of relationships. You know, be like a salmon.
Be like a salmon. Good closing words. Mm-hmm. So we appreciate you guys taking the time to listen to Kind Voice Radio and hope that you go out and use your kind voice to make the world a kinder, more connected place.
How's your day? Come take my arm, let's walk and think away. I want to know your thoughts now, yes it's true. bird, he flew by now just for you. Step outside, you don't know who you'll meet. Feel the bitter patter of the street. Join the crowd and sing in harmony. I won't let go, come link elbows with me. Walk down that lonely road alone, searching for a place to call home. The path is long, we cannot see the end, but the journey's so much better with a friend. Come to my house and rest those weary bones. Drink and laugh, we'll both refill our souls. That cup of cheer you're drinking sure tastes sweet. I'm glad that your acquaintance I did meet. Ooh, and you know that I am there for you. To hear your voice, get to lend a hand. Moment we were together to turn a new kind stranger to a friend. Oh, and you know that I am there for you. To hear your voice, to get to lend a hand. In this moment we were together. A friend.